Well, good evening and welcome back to the Journey Home program. I'm your host, John Mark Grodi, here at EWTN. And once again, we have this great privilege of coming together to hear a story of faith and conversion. We're joined tonight by Father Scott Wooten. He's a former Episcopal priest. And he entered the church in 2017, and it's just an honor to have him here tonight. Father, thanks for being here.
John Mark, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for coming to share your story. And it's always such a delight to have a priest on the show to share both the story of why you're Catholic, but also how you came to be to find your vocation. And your story is also unique because we're going to talk about the Ordinariate today, of which you are a priest. So it's great to have you here, Father.
It's very good to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, let's go back to the beginning. Let's begin with your childhood and your religious background.
Yeah, I was raised in the Episcopal Church. My parents, every Sunday attenders. You know, I was a horrifically shy child. And 6 years old, and I remember this like it was yesterday, sitting in the pews with my dad, and just, you know, I was the kid that kind of hung close to dad. And the procession, of course, of the Episcopal Church is much like the Catholic Church, liturgical church, that is, not not theology. But I was sitting in the pews and watched the procession come up the aisle. And I turned to my dad, and I said, I need to be with them up at the altar. And of course, I bugged my dad enough to where he finally went to the pastor and said, my son wants to be an acolyte. Mm. And the pastor looked at my dad and he said, he's 6 years old. He said, acolytes start at 11. Come back then.
Wow.
Well, I wouldn't take no for an answer, so I just kept on bugging him. And so finally, the pastor said, okay, we'll put you in a cassock and a cotta. You sit in the choir. You're not getting in the sanctuary right now. You'll sit at the end of the choir because we had a formal choir with the sanctuary at St. John's Episcopal in Fort Worth. And if you can keep quiet, we'll think about it. And honestly, that was the last time I sat in the pews, probably for the rest of my life almost. I mean, there were a couple of times, obviously, anyway. But so there I am at the end of the choir and being just as quiet as a, you know, it went well. And so he went ahead and moved me up to the sanctuary. And that's really, you know, kind of the beginning of my calling because I had no idea what it was. I mean, it's 6 years old.
Right.
You don't know, you know, but I had to be by the altar. Mm-hmm. And so there I sat and learned to be an acolyte. And obviously over the years, I was proficient, decent. And I was 10 years old. And that same pastor took me aside with my parents and said, you know, this kid's going to be a priest, right? In an Episcopal church, obviously.
Yeah.
And so my parents knew at that time, and I knew at that time. And that was kind of a, hey, I knew exactly what I was going to be, that I was supposed to be a priest.
Yeah.
But, of course, the problem is the Episcopal church really doesn't have any kind of formation, especially early formation. Hmm. And so you have this calling that honestly is totally unique to any other. I mean, you know, if you want to be a fireman, you know, you can see firemen, you know, these are things that are policemen. These are all things that are known and this is the process and this is what you do. I had no idea what to do with my calling, quite honestly. Mm-hmm. I knew the church was a place that I was very comfortable at and it was, you know, always the place I was looking forward to. Which, again, is unique to a young kid.
Yeah.
Well, in that time, I was 10, I was fifth grade. My parents took me out of the public school system and sent me to Our Lady Victory Catholic School.
And so this was Fort Worth.
And this was in Fort Worth as well. And, you know, that, again, was a place where we went to Mass. Of course, couldn't receive, and they made that quite clear. But I love going up to Mass because you go up through the convent, and the convent was a great, you know, these old buildings still there. I think it's a condo right now, unfortunately, but it's still there. But you know, take you up to the chapel, and I love that as well. And so I always had that kind of draw inexplicably to the altar. It was just there. And I always knew this is where I'm supposed to be. Through my time at the Catholic school, I got to understand that, well, Catholics are very similar, at least outward appearance-wise, to the Episcopal Church. And I got to be very comfortable with Catholicism at that time. And so as time went on, then I went to My parents, again, shift mill. My younger brother, my older sister had gotten into Trinity Valley School, which is a college prep school. And they had finally, I begged Trinity Valley basically to take me in because mom was having to run all the way from Our Lady Victory, which was this part of town, all the way over to Trinity Valley to deliver kids. And so I got in the eighth grade. And, you know, I got to say, as far as a kid that has a calling to the ministry, going through high school, especially a college prep school where everybody's studying to be doctors, lawyers, brokers, you know, architects, the like, they didn't know what to do with me, and I didn't have any idea what I was supposed to do.
Yeah.
Because going into a college prep school, of course, all the scholastics are accelerated, and I am very much average, very, very much average. And so I floundered. And of course, anytime you spoke of church, you kind of got, you know, well, you got maligned. And so being the shy person, I mean, I like being among people, but I'm not the one that is the first to stand up and say, hey, you can beat on me all you want to, but I am, you know, unfortunately, especially at that time, that was not me.
Yeah.
And so I started looking and I said, well, you know, maybe this whole ministry thing's not for me. You know, maybe this just didn't. We had a pastor, my childhood pastor retired. We had a new pastor. He was older and not, you know, he wasn't very charismatic, sure, not sure. Somebody, you know. And so I was like, you know, I don't see myself in him. That's not what I see.
Yeah.
And so here I am, you know, with this calling, but beginning to deny it. And that's why, you know, I kind of call this my Jonah years, because it was the fact that God had called, but I was already starting to hedge that and say, I think I'm not going to be doing that.
What was so you had a sense of calling in the context of the Episcopal Church there and with that pastor who was very encouraging. In terms of your life of prayer, your sense of God, would you have said you had a strong relationship with God up to this point?
Very much so.
Okay.
I mean, I was praying every night.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know, my own prayers. You know, had I known the Liturgy of the Hours, you know, wouldn't that have been nice? Or even the Episcopal prayer book had morning and evening, but nobody bothered to show me that it was in there, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I always have had a close relation with God. I've always known He's in my life. It's just a matter of fact. You know, and we all do.
Yeah.
The Holy Spirit resides in all baptized. We hear His voice.
Yeah.
I think some people, I guess, probably respond to it a little more, a little more sensitive to that voice than others, maybe. Yeah. But we all do.
You know, it's interesting you bring up the Liturgy of the Hours, or what is it called in the Episcopal Church?
Divine Worship, the Daily Office.
All right. So you had a sense of call, but maybe that's an interesting note there, that at that point in a young person's life, to have that sense of call, but not, what do I do with myself in the meantime, right? Like, what do I study? What do I focus on? What do I fill my time with?
Yes.
How do I pray? It could be easy to begin to lose that sense, because what do I do with myself in the meantime?
Well, and plus society is always tearing at you, because it's saying, why? Why would you want to be a priest? Why would you want to be a minister? Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, you know, we don't make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, why would you want to do any of this?
Yeah.
And society is always saying, well, it's time for you to go elsewhere, to do other things. And that's really, in high school, what it was, without a definite, you know, any kind of guidance, any kind of spiritual guidance at all, which, again, the Episcopal Church simply did not give.
Right.
And so, yeah, it got to be where I was just kind of, you know, adrift, so to speak.
Yeah.
And not in a horrible way, but still, you really do need that guidance to find yourself, to find your prayer life, to find out what, you know, what exactly God means by what he's telling.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I continued to start that. I started looking around for what else I could do.
Okay.
And that became a problem, because again, I was very, very far from a stellar student. You know, I was really struggling. I couldn't see that I had any any talents to use. I wasn't athletic. I couldn't, you know, I wasn't really, you know, I played football. Yeah, sure. But, you know, wasn't certainly much good at that. I played basketball and I definitely wasn't good at that, even though I enjoyed basketball. It's one of the things that I enjoyed playing, but I really had zero skill. I just enjoy the game. I still enjoy the game.
Yeah.
Still have zero
good
skill.
Leisure. Yeah.
And so, you know, as you, you know, you kind of lay all your skills out on the table and I'm coming up with zeros because I you know, I don't know what to do. And I remember it was my senior year and college prep school, all the kids going to their, we had one counselor that was a college, you know, he kind of looked at all your skills and said, okay, this is probably what you ought to look at. You know, you tested out well in this. So, and here's the colleges you think you can get into. And of course, everybody was coming through, you know, oh, he suggested Brown or Harvard, you know, he thinks I can get into Harvard and, you know, should be a lawyer. And so it was my turn to go in. And I was like going, well, finally, somebody will say, okay, Scott, here's your skills. Here's what you should do. And so it would be, you know, a little moment of clarity for me. And so he brings me in and he says, you know, Scott, looking at your grades and I'm thinking warehouse, maybe, you know, you should like work in a warehouse somewhere. And sent me out.
Yeah.
And I was walking out of that room. One of those things that just burns in your brain. And going, walking in the hall and they were going, so where, you know, and I said, just don't even want to talk about it. And so I, you know, essentially my entire family on the Wooten side was contractors of one form or another. Mm-hmm. We had plumbers, we had HVAC. My grandfather was a mechanical contractor. My dad was an architect. And I really didn't know what to do. And so my grandfather, concerned that I was just going to be a ne'er do well, I guess, finds me a job in construction. And I'm out at Six Flags Over Texas, and we're building one of those big river raft rides.
Oh, wow.
Ton of concrete. And I'm a simple laborer. Again, no skills, heaven forbid. And so I remember one time one of the forms broke, and it was during the day, and I mean tons of concrete just dumped all over the place. And so they sent us all home. And they said, oh, come back tomorrow. And so basically I came back tomorrow to a ton of concrete that had to be dug up basically and excavated, you know, taken away from the job. Yeah. And I'm 18. And they said, no, 17, that's why. I was 17 and they said, you can't work a jackhammer against union rules. And I still want to see that rule, by the way. So he gives me a pickaxe. And so I'm for a week working a pickaxe, picking, you know, apart concrete and hauling it off. Wow. And I remember we finally had gotten down to the ditch and we were still, I was like 5 feet, you know, I guess I was like 10 foot down because, I mean, I was looking up at the top and doing the pickaxe. And I remember stopping middle of one day, looking up this guy in this white suit. He was just, had a hat on, was just, you know, the picture of success. And I go, man, who's that guy? Well, that's the architect. And I said, yep, that's it. And so that's when I said, I need to go to school and be an architect. I never stopped to think, I'm horrible at math. I do not know how to draw. In fact, I can't draw, I'll be honest. Didn't matter. And so that's when I said, well, I'm going to go into architecture instead. And that was kind of the beginning of the Jonah years of just flat running away, ignoring my call, and saying, this is where I'm going to go.
We're joined tonight by Father Scott Wooten, a former Episcopal priest. So with that new sense of direction, however it turned out, where did you go next?
So next, I went to the only college that would take me, basically, which was Texas Tech University in Lubbock, Texas. It's a great university. And started my way into architecture. And again, a struggle was an understatement. Because I mean, I would sit at my, we had to go through obviously engineering and I can't do math and it was a struggle for me. So I would just bug my professors endlessly. I remember one morning I decided because I couldn't find my prof, he was avoiding me. And because I needed to ask him, you know, basically have him teach it to me again at the class we were learning. And I remember I got up like at 6:30. It was way early. And I went and I just sat at the door of his office. And here in the morning, he comes around the hall, and I look up, and there he is. Yep, I got him. And he turns around and walks away. So I'm like stalking my professor, saying, "You got to teach me this stuff." And it was difficult. It took me 8 years. It was a 5-year degree. It took me 3 extra years to get through architecture. And I mean, at the end, it had turned into just belligerence. I mean, I was just like, I don't care. I'm getting this degree. I really don't care what it takes, you know, what it takes from me. I just, you know, I was like a bull, just, this is going to happen.
Yeah.
And I did get the degree. And so I went into practicing architecture and, started designing highway rest stops in Texas, which is just prestigious as all get out.
And someone's got to do it. Right?
Someone's got to do it. That was me. And I remember my first year of work, I worked with me and an engineer beside in a cubicle at about 5 foot, and we're both 200 pounds plus, so it was pretty tight. We had the best time and laughing all the time and just cracking jokes. It turns out we were the most productive in the firm because we were just blowing and going and laughing and having fun. Mm-hmm. And they, one day they brought me about a year up. Yeah, it was about a year and a month. Boss took me in his office. He said, "I'm sorry, we're going to let you go." Hmm. I said, "What? You're firing me?" He said, "Why?" He said, "Well, you're laughing too much." So I got fired for laughing.
Oh, wow.
And which, you know, I was distraught because, again, I had, it was hard getting through school. Yeah. And here I am fired from my first job. And so I went. It turned out I went across town. I guess it was 2 months later. I got hired by another firm to do 7-Elevens for the Air Force, and on the Air Force bases. And so that was, you know, that went on, and that was fine. And actually, they liked me and they wanted to keep me. And my dad was an architect as well, and he called, and he was distraught, say the least, on what I was doing, because here my resume was highway rest stops, and now we serves on Air Force bases, which he didn't really see was, you know, quote, real architecture. And I was happy as a clam because, you know, it was good work, good pay.
Yeah.
But he said, I needed to come down here and work for me. And I said, "Well, why?" He said, "Well, I need somebody I don't always have to pay." And I said, "Well, that's a selling point, Dad." But family business, Steph and I had talked about it, my wife and I, and we went down there.
Married at this point?
Yeah, I was married at that point. I met Stephanie my senior year in high school.
Okay.
Amongst all of that flailing around and really not knowing what God wanted me to do.
Sure.
For some reason, Stephanie took interest in me.
Aww.
And so we, thick and thin, because there was a time in college when I was about ready to give up. Mm-hmm. And she looked at me and says, I'm not marrying a dropout. Quitters, I do not go with. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, she was really, you know, part of that driving force that kind of got me through some of the roughest times.
That's wonderful.
And so, yeah, we were not even married. We had a kid at that time. Mm-hmm. And so we packed everything up, went back down to Fort Worth, and started working for my dad.
Okay.
And I really thought that was it.
Yeah.
This was my career path. And so I worked 6 years for Dad. And strangely enough, you know, I went back to St. John's Episcopal. All the Wootons forever had been their junior warden, which junior wardens take care of the facility. So okay. I was facility manager, for lack of a better term, I guess. And the only reason we were always the people doing that is we knew where all 23 of the air conditioners and heater units were in the bed. We're the only ones with that knowledge.
And secret knowledge.
It was secret knowledge, you know, but it kept us winning jobs. So anyway, but little by little, I that call, you know, had never disappeared, and it reemerged strongly. And so we were kept on. And strangely enough, my dad did all form of architecture. Everything, office buildings to restaurants to high rises to everything. At that time, he was really doing a lot of churches. And so every time I would go into church, I wanted to stay. Every time I go back to St. John's to do something as a junior warden, I wanted to stay. And Dad pulled me aside one day and said, "You're spending more time at church than you are here." And, you know, stop it. In other words, you know, get back to work. And I finally said, Dad, I think I got a call to the ministry. And of course, that blew his mind because he had seen my struggles. So he said, what are you doing? You look at all this work.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, what are you doing? And so I went in to see my pastor and said, I got this feeling, this draw towards church. Can you take it out of me? Just please, whatever chipset that is in the mind, if you just, press the eject button, because I'm an architect. And we talked, and this went over time. And he finally said, I'm sorry, I can't take this out of you. I think you got a call. And so he forwarded me to the diocese and to the process, so to speak. And I sat down in front of that the committee in the Episcopal Diocese of Fort Worth. And I looked at them all and I said, guys, I want to tell you right up front, if there's a call, I will follow it. But if you have any sense whatsoever that there is no call here, I'm a busy man. You can reject me in 5 minutes. I'll get back. And so that, of course, went on for, I don't know how long that was. It went on for a while. Because the bishop had finally said, Scott, are you going to seminary or not? It's like, what are you doing here? And the committee, sure enough, came back and were unanimous. Said, yeah, you got a call. You need to follow this. And so then it was time to go home. And we had bought a house and we'd taken the roof off of it and built a second floor and, really kind of made this house for us.
Yeah.
Not thinking we were ever going to move. And by that time, I had two kids and said, Steph, because I told Stephanie back in high school, really, mm-hmm. I said, I'd call into something in the construction world, or I might be a priest.
Did she have a faith background?
She is Disciples of Christ.
Okay.
Or was, at least.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, her family was, good attenders. Middle of Texas, if you're quote upstanding in that era, you went to church every Sunday.
Right.
And so, yeah, she was every Sunday at Disciple at the First Christian, Christian Church at TCU, basically. And so, that's where she had gone. So anyway, went home, said, hey, I think we're going to be, selling the house and going up. To Wisconsin, of all things.
Wow.
And so went to Neshota House and in Wisconsin, and a very Catholic-leaning seminary, which turned out to be very fortuitous for me, because it's one thing the Catholic Church actually liked about my scholastic background is the fact that I went to Neshota House.
So is it an Episcopal seminary?
An Episcopal seminary, modeled after Benedictine monastic life. So we were in chapel 4 times a day, mass daily, patristics. A real solid foundation. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of where I was very much introduced, quite honestly, in a strange kind of way, to the Catholic theology and practice.
Yeah.
So
let's actually take a break there, Father.
Absolutely.
You ran from this call for a long time. And now you're finally here at seminary. It seems like you're about to arrive, where God's been calling you for so long time. But we know there's more to the story.
Yes.
So we'll be back in just a couple of minutes to hear the rest of it.
Absolutely.
So stay tuned. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes to hear the rest of Father Scott's story. I want to remind you that if you go to chnetwork.org/story, you can find a whole archive of conversion testimonies, video, written. Actually, Father's written version of his story, which is entitled The Sign of Jonah. You made that reference, Father. That can be found there in that archive as well. So check it out. You're likely to find somebody with a background similar to yours, and I'm sure you'll find their testimony inspiring, and you can share it with others as well. So we'll be back in just a couple minutes to hear the rest of Father's story. We'll see you then. Welcome back to the Journey Home program. We're entering the second half of our hour tonight, speaking with Father Scott Wooten. He's a former Episcopal priest for the Ordinariate, the Anglican
yes.
Ordinariate. And so you can check out more information about the Ordinariate at ordinariate.net. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. But Father, when we left off, you know, your whole life you'd had this sense of calling, and it'd kind of come and kind of, you know, teased at you, and you'd end up, you know, running away in a certain sense for a while. But it came back, you know, and then through discernment and through counsel from your bishop, and you ended up finally at seminary. And so let's pick it up there. What happened next?
You know, seminary was a great time. Again, it was a time I learned much about all about prayer life. You know, obviously learning a lot about the church, learning a lot about the history of the church, theology, you know, all that was great. But really, it was the time I spent in chapel. And in fact, that was the one we do what we had middler evaluations. And this was what they would send back to your bishop to say, this guy's great, or this guy's, you know, not great, and you need to, you know, to put him aside. And so we were all worried about the middler evaluations. What bad would they say? You know, what's the bad stuff? And I remember getting it and wandering through, and they had a part where, you know, the good stuff. And I'm like, okay, I know the good stuff. Let me, you know, get to the bad. And the knock on me was, he spends too much time in chapel. And I'm like, honestly, I thought that's what we were supposed to be doing here, you know? It's kind of the focus. But they were like, you know, we're worried that, you know, I'm not really sure why, but, that, you know, that's what the thing was. But that was my, again, it was that draw to the altar. I just, and the Shota House has a beautiful chapel. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the Shota House went fine. After I learned how to live in community, because, you know, the stories I could tell of living in the Shota House, because you lived on campus, everybody was very close to each other, they ate together, they prayed together, you know, families were all, you know, our kids basically could run loose in the, because it was, at that time, it was out in the middle of the country, kind of like your studios here, mm-hmm. where you didn't have to worry about anybody, and, you know, it was great. And so, you know, but finally, you know, I guess my first year at Neshota House, I had a pastor from All Saints Episcopal in Fort Worth come up, and Father Bob Osworth came up and said, hey, would you like to work for me when you get out of here? And, you know, that's the main thing is when you enter, you know, I left architecture and don't have an income, and here's this man wanting to offer me a job. I'm like, absolutely, you know, and so I've got this set. And so, sure enough, graduated Neshota House and went to work for All Saints. I was their youth pastor and chaplain for their upper school, and you know, very interesting time. Quite honestly, learning how churches work, the in and out of being a pastor, and loved youth work. In fact, that was one of those forks in the road where I was like, I could do youth work. And I did interview, and this was kind of the first little light bulb that said the Episcopal Church wasn't all what it's supposed to be. I was going to interview for an Episcopal school in Dallas, not to be named. But one of the criteria was you cannot pray in the name of the Trinity or in the name of Jesus Christ.
That must have been different and new.
And I said, okay, I don't think I want to go there. And of course, that was the Episcopal Church. It differs so broadly from one place to another, even one church to the next.
Yeah. What time period was this?
This was late 90s. Okay. 99 would have been.
I mean, it's only increased the past two decades, but already at that time, there was certainly an increasing speed of kind of fragmentation within the theology of that. Communion.
Yeah, you know, the craziest thing is we thought of ourselves as Catholic, but we all knew that I couldn't go up to many of the other dioceses. I wouldn't be allowed. I wouldn't be accepted. I wouldn't be allowed to say Mass. I wouldn't, you know, they would not accept my orders because I was on the more conservative end of the Episcopal Church. And it's looking back on it, it's ridiculous, but why I didn't see how can you be Catholic, meaning universal, but fragmented?
Right. On such a foundational thing.
On the Trinity, by the way.
Sometimes arguments made, well, you know, it's just, there's differences in the unessentials, you know, but in the essentials were the same. That's pretty essential.
That's pretty essential.
In the name of the Trinity. Yeah.
So, you know, so anyway, that kind of steered me back into parish, being a parish pastor. And so I did. I went to three missions, Graham, Jacksboro, and Possum Kingdom, Texas. And so Possum Kingdom's a lake, and it's a little chapel, beautiful church. Possum Kingdom.
That is the wonderful thing.
Yes, yeah, indeed. Where possums rule. But anyway, it's a beautiful area. It's a retirement area. And wonderful people. I cannot tell you, that church, all three of those churches were great, but PK was unbelievably good. Like I said, just salt of the earth people. Yeah. Haven't gotten out there in a while, but anyway, so here I am as a missionary vicar is what they called us, and I was running three services every Sunday and kind of happy, but it was difficult because it was divided and all the churches grew. It was doing great, but then one thing led to another. I got called to Wichita Falls. And picked up, had another child on the way up at Neshota House. And so I had three kids and really missions, just the fact of life. Episcopal clergy get paid by the churches. They don't get paid by the diocese. Gotcha. And so this is one of the problems with the church is the fact you kind of work your way up the ladder. The bigger the church, the bigger the paycheck. And quite honestly, the sky's the limit as far as that goes. There are some Episcopal clergy that are very well paid. And I was at the bottom of that ladder. And so I knew with three kids, I needed to start working my way up that ladder. Went to Wichita Falls and Good Shepherd, Wichita Falls, another great church. But again, the turmoil within the Episcopal church was really reaching a critical stage at this point. And I went up to a general convention just to be an observer when they were going through the Gene Robinson debate. Mm-hmm. And that is whether a homosexual can be ordained, and basically, is this lifestyle going to be blessed by the church?
Right.
It was the idea. And so I was up in Minneapolis for that. And I was up with Father Russ Arnett, who is actually, he's now a Catholic priest in the Archdiocese of Milwaukee.
Yes.
And so I was up with him, and he and I were both Episcopal clergy at the time. And I remember after that vote, I went up to one of the bishops in one of the larger dioceses, and I said, Bishop, can you give me any reason, biblically speaking, why you would vote for this? And he says, son, sometimes you have to realize the Bible's a dusty old book, just needs to be put on the shelf.
Wow.
And it was at that time, that was probably low point. And me and Father Annette were walking out of that. And I remember looking at Russ and saying, I want to take my collar off. I don't want anybody to know that I'm an Episcopal priest right now. And so sure enough, shortly after that came ACNA, Anglican Communion of North America, and we joined that and thought, well, okay, this is this way. Now, at that time, you also have to realize that many of us were saying the Catholic Church is the answer. We just need to get there.
Yeah.
And, we thought right now, the problem is they're already sending, the Episcopal Church were already sending some of the bishops as envoys over to the Vatican saying, please accept us. And of course, the Vatican looking at the church is used to dealing with leaders of said denomination. It'd be much like the United States, if some congressman went over to Russia and was talking to Putin and saying, hey, I need to talk to you about foreign policy. And he's going, well, who are you? Where's the president?
Right.
And it's exactly what the Vatican said is, who are y'all? And why? Well, you don't want to talk to our leaders because they're out there. And this began that conversation very, very awkwardly. And this was all being done, obviously above my pay level. But I was of the faction that said the Catholic Church is where we needed to go. The problem is our idea of how to get there was we'll just show them that we're very Catholic and they'll accept us, mm-hmm. which is, of course, the most ridiculous, idea known to mankind. But we started that process of separating then from the Episcopal Church, because we knew that, that being a part of the Episcopal Church would be kind of anathema to having any chance of getting closer to the Catholic Church. And so we separated. Well, then, of course, what do we call ourselves? And so, you know, we couldn't call ourselves Episcopalians anymore. And so we decided, well, you know, it was the Anglican Communion that we're, you know, that we stem from, obviously. It was the Church of England, the Anglicans. And so we would just adopt the name Anglican. And so here you have it, the more liberal wing of the Episcopal, of the Church of England in the United States is Episcopalian. The more conservative traditional wing is ACNA, is Anglican. And so that's where you got the two names. We quickly learned that the ACNA was very, very diverse. I was on the council, the committee that was figuring out the catechism. And it was like the second meeting, and they were talking about what it looked like. And I had a lady sitting next to me that I'd known from my church in Fort Worth, and she had the Catechism of the Catholic Church sitting right there. And she kind of said, tell them this. I said, okay. So I stood up and I said, why are we, you know, here's what we should be doing. And that's the last meeting I went to. they pretty much dismissed me from that committee, and I no longer made those trips. So it was obvious that there was great divide in there. And again, how can we be Catholic then? Yeah. And so this went on for years and years and years, and our bishops continue to say, "Yes, we're close. The Catholic Church will bring us in." And then, of course, 2012 came about with the formation of the Ordinariate.
Right.
And as I was reading through that constitution, that document, again, you know, it's like, well, where is it in here that they're going to accept our orders? Mm-hmm. Because Episcopalians, Anglicans, still, you know, are under the idea that they had apostolic succession. And, you know, that was one of the things I was. I was under apostolic orders. My orders were valid. I was certain of that. And so when the first group of us jumped at the idea of going to the Ordinariate, I hung back. Because I said, how can I do that? Plus, you know, Good Shepherd, Wichita Falls, we had gotten to be kind of family by that time. And I said, I can't abandon these folks. And so the first group went out, and it was a slow and steady bleed, quite honestly, from that point on, all of our clergy just going over to the Catholic Church. And it was very difficult because, you know, I would always call and say, God bless. You know, I'm glad you're following God's call. And of course, they would say, well, you can come on.
Were some of them coming with their congregations?
Some were.
Okay.
Some weren't.
Gotcha.
What we found, to our surprise, and still to my surprise, is though the clergy were very ready to come to the Catholic Church, the congregations not so much. Huh. They really didn't see the urgency, which obviously was a failure in teaching on my part. And I still work on a lot of my previous congregations to come over. But it hasn't been as successful with that as we would like. It's still a focus.
Yeah.
And I still talk to my people at St. John Vianney. We've got to focus on how to bring Anglicans, Methodists, you know, Protestant churches over to come home. Mm-hmm. We've got to figure out ways to guide them. Mm-hmm. So as that progressed, I kind of for a time rested assured that my bishop was going to take care of all this. We would be Catholic. All would be well. Mm-hmm. And about that time, another church had come open in Arlington. And I knew it was open. And it said, no, I'm not interested. I like Good Shepherd. And my bishop called me one day and said, Scott, you've been up there for, you know, 12 years. You did a great job. I need you in this church. I want you to run for, I can't place you there, obviously. You need to be in this. And always obedient as I try to be, I said, yes, Bishop, I'll go. Well, they elected me. Mm-hmm. And in the Episcopal Church, it's a job interview,
right?
They elect you and they hire you. And so I went into that church, and a bigger church, bigger pay, everything was great. It had, the church was deeply divided. I won't go into the issues. They were many, and I got to the point where, you know, it was a, I guess I'll get to that first. But first, as I got into the bigger church, I got to be president of the standing committee. I got to be in the upper echelons of the diocese, and I got to peek behind the curtain to realize that nothing's going on. The bishop was saying that we're there. Nothing was going on. And about that same time, I was on the committee of ministry, which brings people, aspirants, mm-hmm. that are looking towards the priesthood. We're the ones that, you know, I went through that committee at first. Well, I was now the person doing the interviewing.
Right.
And we had a man come through, and of course, we're sacramental. Anglicans are, you know, sacramental. And so very, you know, very sure of those. And we had a man come through that admitted he didn't believe in any of the sacraments. And I like, you know, thank you for coming. Mm-hmm. But, and the rest of the committee said, no. And then the bishop came in and said, no, you will send this guy through. And I said, Bishop, he doesn't believe in the sacraments. Mm. He said, that's okay, I'll ordain him. And as he's saying Mass, I said, what happens when he says Mass? He didn't believe what he was doing. Yeah. Well, I've ordained him, therefore. And I said, I don't think so.
Yeah.
So I went back to my church, and for, I don't know, it was weeks, because I went into deep research. When you're a pastor, you don't have time to be the academic. You don't have time to go into research. I did, mm-hmm. and much to the detriment, I guess, of my church of those weeks, but looking for intention. You have form, you have matter, of course, in any sacrament, but you also have to have intention. You know, how is it that when I say Mass, I've got the credence table over here, I've got the elements right here, that I don't consecrate all of the bread and the wine in the church? It's because, right. is my intention for this?
Yeah.
You have to have intention. You have to have the intention of body and blood. Mm. So what happens when you ordain somebody? You know, we all know back in the Church of England Henry left the church, and of course Bloody Mary brought him back in. Elizabeth finally severed that link, and then they were looking for bishops. And so, you know, they had, and for other priests, how can they perpetuate having some ruse of an apostolic succession? Well, they got Catholic bishops who were willing to be disobedient to the Pope and ordain these guys. Okay, they may have had matter. There is a big question about form, because they had changed the form, the ordinary at that time. Intention. What did they intend to do? Did they intend to ordain Catholic priests? No, they intended to ordain Anglican priests. Mm. And for me, at least, that was it. I said, my orders aren't valid. I don't care how many Polish Catholics we got in the line here. I don't have valid orders. And about that time, I had some problems at the church I was in Arlington, and they were deep problems. And, you know, I always say that, you know, there are reasons. If your church's not growing, there are reasons. And unfortunately, many times those reasons are some of the people in your church. And so I knew that I was going to have to kind of blow up the church. I mean, you know, I was going to have to remove some people from the church so it could grow again,
right.
because we had people standing in the way. And I said, and I went home to Stephanie, and I said, Steph, I don't want to totally disassemble this church and say, oh, I'm going to the Catholic Church. Thank you. You know, I said, I don't want any part of that. I need to make this decision now. And, you know, Stephanie, whose family was not in love with the Catholic Church, had kind of said, I don't know. But at that time, she said, it's time. And so all this time, I've been asking God to give me a door to the Catholic Church, because I knew now my bishop wasn't going to do it. Now I had to do it alone. Lord, how do I do that? You've got to give me some way. And my dad at that time called me in one day. I was at work, and he said, you need to get over here right now. And I came over and sit in his conference table. He had all his bills out on the table. And he said, Scott, I can't do this anymore. And I said, oh, you ready to retire? I mean, what? You know, He was in dementia. He was in the beginning stages of dementia. Oh. He literally could not add his bills up anymore. And so he says, you know, can you come back? And I said, funny, a year ago, I would have said, are you crazy? Right now, I said, yeah, I'll come back and work for you. And he could pay me $1,000 a month. And that was a start. And so I resigned my orders. I resigned from the church first.
Yeah.
I quickly had two churches that called me that were Anglican and wanted me to come pastor their church. And I said, no, I can't do that either. And so I resigned my orders and I was out. And so my thought was, I'll go to the Catholic Diocese of Fort Worth, and I'll be a DRE, or I'll do filing. I'll mow their lawn. Whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I went on their site, and I was making $1,000 a month, but you can't live off that for Dad, for basically closing down his firm. And so I went to the diocese website, and they had all these jobs. I said, great. I sent resumes in for every single one of them. Mm-hmm. And so I got a call back, and I said, hey. And he wanted me to go have lunch with them. And I said, hey. My problems are solved. God has led me out of the Episcopal Church into the Catholic Church, and I got a job. So I went to Chili's to the job, and it was basically this guy saying, quit sending resumes, will you please? And I'm like, sorry. And I said, can you hire me any of these jobs? He says, no, we're not going to hire anybody that was from the Anglican Church. Your education's all wrong.
Hmm.
I said, okay. He said, so stop sending resumes. And I said, so I went back just like...
Because at this point, you weren't even Catholic yet.
No.
Yeah, okay.
No, I went to... the minute I got out, they said... I called Monsignor Perkins, who was the vicar general at that time of the ordinariate. Yeah. And he said, get yourself to a Catholic church and into RCIA. Yeah. Then RCIA. And so I did. We'd at least gone in RCIA, which was interesting because we went in halfway through. And they said, we have to see if you know enough to come in through, or you just have to wait till it starts again. And so I went in to talk with the wonderful woman that taught RCIA, and she kind of quizzed me. And an hour later, after I told her basically the history of the church, said, I think you're okay. And so they shuffled us in midway. So anyway, I was in RCIA at least, but I was not confirmed. Okay. And so I went back to the office and said, Steph, this is going to be bad because they won't hire me at the Catholic Diocese. I don't have the ability to practice architecture anymore. I mean, honestly, I was more of a danger at that time if I had tried. I don't know what to do. So I kind of laid out all my talents on the table, as few as they were. And I said, well, home inspection came up. I said, well, I'll get licensed as a home inspector, which I did, but that really wasn't bringing in much money. I had an ex-parishioner from the church in Arlington that I had just left call me up and say, you know CAD work? And I said, yeah. He says, we're in commercial roofing. We need somebody to do estimations. Mm-hmm. And so long story short, I became a commercial roofer, mm-hmm. working for a great little firm doing commercial roofing. And so that was basically, you know what, and that's, you know, as I first got out, you know, and you talk about Jim Anderson with the Coming Home Network, you know, he called me just right off the bat. And I was like, how do you know me? And he said, I just want to let you know, we're supporting you. We'll, you know, whatever you need, we'll pray for you. And I said, great. But he would call me periodically. And there were times that he called that I was just like, I don't know what the Lord's doing, but I'm going broke. And, you know, I can't pay my taxes. And he sat and listened to it all when he should have just hung with the phone and said, oh, what kind of crazy person you are. But, you know, it really a support.
Yeah.
For those of us going through that process.
Well, that experience, you know, pastors sort of getting, you know, falling between two stools, so to speak, of being convicted of the Catholic faith, and that meaning that they have to, at some point, leave their ministry, but with no promise, no certainty of having something on the inside, and even having this gap of well, it's not that you can't get involved in ministry, but when you're not even Catholic, there's going to be some hesitancy about hiring someone into a ministry position. So there's just this gap. And it's not, you know, sometimes it's traversed well. Sometimes the church is helpful. Sometimes it's not, you know, people on the local level. Anyway, we have about 5 minutes left, Father. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you know, you're what happened next? Yeah.
So anyway, I got through the 3 years of discernment very well. I got a call one day as I was doing a roofing estimation, and it was a bishop's secretary, and said, you know, would you like to speak with the bishop? And I said, are you kidding me? I said, yes. And he said, long story short, he said, I'm going to put you down in Cleburne and at St. John Vianney, and you'll be the pastor there. And so went down there and show up to Mass, and 19 folks in the pews. And so we started with very small in a church and a school auditorium. And again, long story short, we now have our own church and beautiful facility, great people. Mm-hmm. And so really the ordinariate tended to be a very good place for me, because you always wonder, you know, should I go pastoral provision or should I go ordinariate? Yeah. And ordinariate was absolutely the place for me.
Well, and one of the beauties of the ordinariate, you know, the church in her wisdom recognized that there is a lot of great, beautiful patrimony in terms of Anglicanism, beautiful prayers and hymns. Yes. And so some of that is able to be preserved and brought in to full communion with the Catholic faith. And I've been to the ordinariate liturgy. It's absolutely beautiful. Everybody should check that out at some point. Go attend one. They're really, really wonderful.
No, I agree. It is a beautiful liturgy. It's a very traditional liturgy. And, you know, beautiful hymnody. It is, you know, we kind of get the opportunity to really put on a great, you know, worship experience. I mean, because it is meeting God right there. It's that glimpse of heaven that we offer at every Mass. And I think the ordinary does that quite well. So,
well, Father, thanks so much for sharing your story, your testimony. You know, I think there's we particularly want to think about those pastors who may be out there and who maybe stumble upon your testimony and be somewhere in the midst of that long road, perhaps earlier in the journey of having that call, you know, and maybe not quite ready to give into it. But also, you know, those who have become convicted of the Catholic faith but are now facing, you know, these real risks, these real sacrifices of perhaps leaving it all behind with an uncertain future in order to become Catholic. So with those people in mind, what's a word of encouragement that you might give them?
You know, always trust in God. If you hear the call, God will find a way. I never went hungry. I never went without a roof over my head. Now, did I have a lot and miss a lot of stuff? Absolutely. But God is faithful, and He asks us to step out in His faith. And I, that's the whole part of being a Christian, is the fact of you've got to believe in what you don't see. And if you feel that call, test it. I mean, at the very worst, I would have been a commercial roofer with a great little firm.
Yeah.
Certainly not what my hope, but and I'm certainly glad that it was that I was true to that call. But, you know, at the end of the day, it was still going to be much better than languishing in the Anglican church, mm-hmm. trying to figure out where the real church is.
Yeah.
So step out in faith. That's the thing, is you got to take that blind step. God is just not going to, the red carpet's never going to roll down. You know, you're never going to have just that perfect, mm-hmm. That perfect course, but God will find your way.
Yeah. I think sometimes we psych ourselves out because we're thinking maybe two or three or four steps ahead,
yes.
when all He's calling us is to take the next step.
Yes. And that's the thing, is don't think too far down the road, yeah. because you're right. You step out, you give up your orders, and you say, where am I now? And you cannot let your mind go, what if, what if, what if? Mm-hmm. You just have to say, next step, next step, next step.
Yeah.
And sure enough, you know, it turns out that God leads you. Yeah. Who would have figured, huh?
Who would have figured? Well, thank you so much, Father, again, for your testimony and for your continued ministry, your fidelity to that call.
Absolutely.
That's great. So great to have you here. And thank you for joining us for this episode of the Journey Home program. I want to reiterate that invitation, that especially if you are or you know of a pastor from a non-Catholic Christian tradition who is thinking about becoming Catholic, please have them check out chnetwork.org. You know, we were formed as an apostolate of support, particularly for pastors who are on the journey home to the Catholic Church. And certainly we want to answer questions and, you know, we have resources and all that. But most importantly, we just want to be with you, praying for you and praying with you and supporting and encouraging you as you continue that journey. Every person who's convicted of the Catholic faith, who is on that journey, has to experience a little bit of that leap of faith, that at some point you take a step out of faith and you don't know all the repercussions. So all you can do is Be as prepared and prayerful as you can and take the next right step. But we want to be supporting you and encouraging you on that journey. So check out chnetwork.org. You can find all kinds of resources and support there. But in the meantime, we'll be back again next week to hear another great story. And until then, God bless.